Welcome to ScotsCast, the Bible teaching podcast of Scots Church Melbourne.
Who would have thought with the coronation coming up that there'd be so many questions to worry about? Number one, whether Harry and Meghan are invited. Number two, whether or not they'll actually come. Number three, did you see this one? Whether animal products will be used in the traditional anointing oil. And number four, here's the big one, whether Charles will arrive at the ceremony in the same golden carriage that was used by his mum. It is amazingly ornate, built in the year 1760 and used in every coronation since. But the problem is, of course, there is almost no suspension. It's a very rough ride. The Queen often complained about it. And so apparently they might just use the silver carriage instead. Or, who knows, maybe just something from the Rolls-Royce collection. Grab one from the Royal Carpool. One thing's for sure, though. He won't just grab an Uber. Because I guess, for an occasion like your coronation as king, it's good to make your entrance count. It says a lot about your power, about your values, about the kind of king you're setting out to be. Traditional, opulent, gold-covered but uncomfortable. Maybe that's not Charles. We'll have to wait and see. Now this morning, as we begin the lead up to Easter, we're starting a short series that's going to take us through the final chapters of Luke's Gospel as he shows us very explicitly the arrival of King Jesus in Jerusalem for his coronation. As we follow in the next few weeks the sequence of events that take us to Good Friday and Easter Sunday. Now, I'm aware if you're someone who likes to follow the traditional church calendar, that it's not quite a tidy fit with the usual schedule that puts Palm Sunday the week before Easter. But you'll notice the entrance of Jesus into Jerusalem in Luke's Gospel, which we're following, comes in chapter 19. And in our series, we're going to cover not just the grand arrival of the king, but also the betrayal of the king in chapter 22 and the trial of the king in chapter 23 and on Good Friday the death of the king, which I'm calling God Save the King because that's what they said as they mocked him, and then Easter Sunday, Long Live the King, the resurrection in Luke chapter 24. And so here we are this morning in Luke chapter 19, as Jesus of Nazareth, having built up something of a reputation through his healings and his miracles and his mysterious parables, is just outside Jerusalem, near the villages of Bethphage and Bethany, on the Mount of Olives. And it's time, says Jesus, to make a dramatic but unusual entrance. An entrance that's going to say something about who he is. Now, according to a modern map, it's a distance of about 6.5 kilometres that he's going to travel. You can actually check that out sometime on your own phone. The Mount of Olives famously looks down across Jerusalem city. It's about an hour's walk down to the valley, then up the next hill to Jerusalem. But at this point, Jesus is not for walking. And Luke outlines for us an elaborate plan that unfolds in verses 30 to 32. Curious, in a way, for the number of times Luke finds an excuse to point out that it's all about a colt, a young donkey. Jesus sends two of his disciples to the village. He says, Go into the village in front of you, where on entering, you'll find a colt tied on which no one has ever yet sat. Untie it, bring it here. Which does seem kind of odd, doesn't it? Just go and untie it and bring it. And if anyone sees you and asks, if you're challenged, just tell them, the Lord needs it. Which is exactly what happens. Luke says they find the colt, they're untying it, and someone says, hey, what are you doing with my colt? I mean, it's kind of like stealing your bike, hot wiring your car. But verse 34, the disciples say what Jesus told them to say, and suddenly it's all okay, with no real explanation. Maybe he's heard that Jesus is coming and he's a fan. Seems in the next few verses there are plenty of fans around. So verse 35, they bring the donkey colt to Jesus. And they make a kind of a makeshift saddle out of their coats. And off they go towards Jerusalem. Using their cloaks not only for a saddle, but others are throwing their clothes on the road, their valuable woven designer garments, to smooth out the road in front of him for this procession into Jerusalem. Now, John, in his gospel, tells us that he's surrounded by the waving of palm branches and shouts of Hosanna, from which we get Palm Sunday. Luke's account is briefer, no palm branches. But here is Jesus riding his donkey colt, cloaks spread out everywhere, down the Mount of Olives in verse 37, closer and closer to the gates of the royal city of Jerusalem. And Luke says the whole multitude of his disciples are rejoicing and praising God with a loud voice for all the mighty works they've seen, saying these words. You can see them on the screen, and it's significant because while he's been working incognito up till now, and while there's no golden carriage, they know exactly who they're dealing with. Verse 38. Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory in the highest. Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord. Which, when you think about that scene, is kind of odd, isn't it? Because, you know, in the end, if you've been in the habit of celebrating Palm Sunday, and you've seen Sunday school kids waving their palm branches around, it is kind of festive, and we think of it maybe in traditional terms as a grand occasion, a grand parade. But step back and look at it for a moment, and it's not grand at all. It's just a guy on a donkey. No royal carriage, no Roman legions or war horses, not a Rolls Royce in sight, just the guy on a donkey, a small donkey at that. And yet even so, the crowds around him recognise that something big is happening. Because you see, they know the words of the prophet Zechariah that we heard in our first reading this morning. Zechariah, years before, is looking forward to the time when the nation of Israel will be put back together again. As a nation, they have been smashed over and over again, smashed by the Assyrians in 721 BC, smashed by Babylon in 587. I heard the other day that Russia's invasion of Ukraine has displaced 8 million Ukrainians. Now refugees in Europe. This was the same, though more intentional, in that both the Assyrians and Babylon deliberately exiled the majority of Israel's population, took them with them, like the 160,000 Ukrainian kids that we heard about this week. Zechariah is looking forward to the day when that process will be reversed, when there will be a homecoming, when there'll be peace and prosperity instead of war. A time when Jerusalem, which he calls the daughter of Mount Zion, when Jerusalem will rejoice. Let me remind you again of the very specific picture that he paints. Zechariah chapter 9, verse 9, "Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout aloud, O daughter of Jerusalem. Behold, your king is coming to you. Righteous and having salvation is he, humble and mounted on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey." This king, when he comes, here's the surprise. He's not coming on a war horse. He's not riding in a chariot. It's almost jarring in its contrast. I know some of you are Ted Lasso fans. It's the show that's taken the world by storm. Ted's an American football coach who takes on an English soccer team. And in the first episode of the new series that started this week, Nathan, his previous offsider, has been appointed to coach an opposing club. And Nathan has turned up to his new coaching position, his high-powered coaching position, in his beaten-up old lime green Mini, which is now in the process of being towed out of the car park because it's just not in keeping with the sort of people who come to that club. By the end of the episode, his boss has given him the keys to a new car, an Aston Martin DB11, something more fitting. You see, because if you're coaching West Ham United, there is no way you're going to turn up to a press conference in an old lime green Mini. Jesus turns up happily humble, mounted on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey, exactly as Zechariah says. Not a chariot, because God says through Zechariah, "I will cut off the chariot from Ephraim, the northern tribe of Israel." Not a war horse, because God says through Zechariah, "I will cut off the war horse from Jerusalem, and the battle bow will be cut off. And he shall speak peace to the nations. His rule shall be from sea to sea and from the river to the ends of the earth." Speaking peace to every nation. No more power games. Proclaiming that, though, from a position of humility and righteousness, from the equivalent of a little green Mini. Who'd ever listen? From a donkey rather than from the biggest war horse wins. This is a reverse arms race. Who would ever be impressed by that? This is a king who is going to lead by his humble service. This is a king whose glory is going to come from what he gives up rather than what he takes. Not a crown of gold that's heavy with jewels, but a hand-woven crown of thorns. Not lifted up onto a throne, but onto a cross. Who would ever listen to a king like that, promoting a kingdom like that? You will have heard of those brothers in Queensland, Gareth and Nathaniel Train, who, according to police analysis, were motivated in their deadly attack on police in December by what have been called their Christian beliefs. A stockpile of weapons, fighting to the death for what they, in their conspiracy-riddled minds, thought were reasons Jesus himself would have approved of. You think? Zechariah says, "Behold, your king is coming to you, righteous and having salvation, you see, humble, mounted on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey. Which means, of course, when Jesus rides into Jerusalem that way, the crowd knows exactly what it means. Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory in the highest. A long-expected, long-awaited King who will bring God's peace and restoration. It's Him. And the Pharisees, of course, are outraged and they say to Jesus, make them stop saying that. They say, rebuke your disciples for calling you king. To which Jesus says, if they shut up, even the stones will be saying it. Because the reality is it's true. And the time has come to announce it to the world. That the way of peace has come in the person of this humble man on a donkey. And what he's going to model and demonstrate in these coming days in Jerusalem as he's betrayed and tried and spat on and put up on a cross in a mock coronation with his claim to be the King who comes in the name of the Lord. That is where peace will come from. And yet by the time we get to Easter Sunday, and I hope you'll follow through the series, by the time we get to Easter Sunday, you will need to address the question on a personal level. What if it's actually true that God's way is the way of humble service and sacrifice and not the way of power and prestige? What if it's actually true that this king on a humble donkey colt really does come in the name of the Lord himself? What's it going to mean to give your loyalty to a king like that? Just over the page, if you're looking at a Bible, in chapter 22, the disciples are squabbling over who's to be regarded as the greatest. To which Jesus says, the kings of the Gentiles lord it over them, but I'm among you as one who serves. Which means if you want to be great, you've got to be least. Which in our world just doesn't make any sense at all. It just means you're going to get treated unfairly and taken advantage of and abused and, metaphorically at least, crucified. Which again, will only really make sense when we get to the events of Easter Sunday. I came across a post on Twitter the other day from a guy who calls himself the Hellenist, a genuinely, and I'm not kidding, a fan of the old Greek gods, and not just the Chris Hemsworth movie, because he says this, real gods like Zeus are forms of the good, strength, power, beauty, health, virtue. Fake gods like Jesus are forms of the bad. Weakness, powerlessness, humiliation, ugliness, emaciation. He says, which gods we worship determines what we manifest. Manifest the good, manifest Zeus. Be assertive, he says, be strong. Worship those things as the ultimate good. Which, of course, without attaching it to Zeus worship, is exactly what our culture likes to do. Just visit Chadston Shopping Centre sometime. And yet when we follow through the events of these next few chapters of Luke, and do feel free to read ahead, when you watch as Jesus consciously sets aside the power that he so clearly has at his disposal, ultimately, by Easter Sunday, we will see where God's favour really lies. Friends, it is just a donkey colt, not a war horse, not an ornate golden carriage. But that is how Jesus comes into his glory. That is the path that brings peace. And even today, that's the path we're called to celebrate as we welcome Jesus as King. And you know, it should be true. Which God we worship should, in fact, determine what we manifest, what we show to the world. Like those first disciples, we should be making some noise about it. That's what we'll be hearing about from Lauren at our mission lunch today, keeping on putting out the news of the glory of our humble King. Because even if we don't, the stones certainly will.
You've been listening to Scotscast, the Bible teaching podcast of Scots Church Melbourne.